February 11th session of the Portland City Council. Call to order. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman? Adams?
Here. Before we begin, we'd like to recognize a very valued member of our team. Will, would you please come forward? Please have a seat. Welcome.
Thank you.
I have a proclamation that I'd like to read on behalf of the City Council. Whereas the City of Portland prizes its citizens who throughout their lives continually assume the responsibility for helping others who are less fortunate. And whereas Will White, an honors graduate of Yale University and a man universally respected for his intelligence, diligence, honesty, and commitment, has dedicated his career to advancing social and economic justice for all. And whereas Will White has been throughout his career a constant and dedicated advocate for affordable housing and was one of the founders of the Housing Development Center, a developer of affordable housing, and a resource for the community development industry throughout Oregon. And whereas as director of the Bureau of Housing and Community Development from 2004 to 2009, Will has compiled a notable record of service, which included leading the implementation of the 10-year plan in homelessness in numerous ways, including his work with the council to secure record amounts of general fund support for the 10-year plan. And whereas Will consistently has worked to shepherd complex projects like the Jeffrey through a myriad of regulatory hurdles so that seniors, people with disabilities, families, with children and other disenfranchised Portland residents could have safe, stable homes. And whereas he has tirelessly championed the preservation of project-based Section 8 housing, including the successful bringing of local and national foundation resources to the preservation effort and his advocacy at Congress and with HUD on the kind of issues that are too technical for most advocates, but make the difference between successful deals and failures, and whereas Will's work helped low and moderate income people achieve a greater level of personal and financial stability through support for the groundbreaking Economic Opportunity Initiative and a broad spectrum of homeownership programs, and whereas Will White has served the City of Portland with the utmost honor and distinction and will continue to serve his community for years to come, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby declare February 11th as an official day of appreciation for Will Wright. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Sam.
What are you going to do?
He's going to Disneyland.
Yeah. No. Well, it is a daunting job market out there, but actually I've been fortunate in putting out some inquiries, and I'm going to be going to Washington, D.C. to work for our new Senator, Jeff Merkley.
Congratulations.
I know, Mayor, that members of the council would like to have a chance to make some comments, and I wonder if we could recognize Commissioner Fritz first.
So I wanted to thank you, Will, for all your service to the city and the city's most vulnerable citizens, and also to me as a candidate last year. One of the most interesting things and most helpful things that happened when I was running for 13 months was that you put together a whole morning where all the candidates for all the seats were invited to come and listen to your staff talk about the programs that the Bureau of Housing and Community Development has done. And that solved multiple benefits, firstly in informing candidates and making sure that we didn't say the incorrect facts when we were incorrect allegations as we were on the circuit and talking with citizens. And also, it helped me know what a wonderful staff that you have put together and the wonderful programs that they're doing. The mayor mentioned the Economic Opportunity Program, where I think it's something like 2,300 people have been helped to find jobs that are not just minimum wage jobs, but well-paying jobs. And so that's certainly the legacy, especially in these tough economic times, of people who have been helped to get trained for really good jobs, is something that we don't necessarily think of the Bureau of Housing and Community Development having done. Mm-hmm. And that was the program that I thought was one of the most compelling that you've done, but it's just one of many. And so thank you for all your service.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I appreciated your professionalism. We've had to work together a lot under
tough circumstances trying to find emergency housing, and you've always been the consummate professional. I appreciated, especially recently, talking with you, and you've had a really tough job, and I've always recognized that and appreciated how you've approached your job, and I know you're going to serve Jeff well. He's very lucky to have you. I'm very excited that that's where you're going, mm-hmm. So I'll be talking to you in that capacity, I'm sure. Good luck to you,
no
Will.
No doubt. Thank you.
I just want to thank you for your tenure as director of the Bureau of Housing and Community Development. You know, your tenure has been, I indicated in an email to you, it's been a tough time that you took the helm, and but I think you navigated through some turbulent times. We're not through those turbulent times yet, but I think you've done a great job in you know, balancing your resources with your commitments, and I'm really excited to hear you'll be working for Senator Merkley. That's good news for, I know it's good news for Portland. I think it's good news for Oregon and the nation, too. So thanks for all your service, Will.
Thank you.
Will, as the housing commissioner, if I could, Mayor, take a couple of minutes just to reflect on Will White's tenure. I've had the great honor of being the housing commissioner since I was sworn in June of last year. And I had to fill some pretty big shoes. We've had two prior housing commissioners, Gretchen Cifori, who we think of as essentially the mother of this movement, Commissioner Stinn. And it was daunting for me to take over and to follow in their footsteps. And I came to office during a particularly challenging time in our city's history, as we were on the cusp of the greatest economic crisis of my lifetime. I have been privileged to have a steady partner during these past 7 months to help not only bring me up to speed as the new housing commissioner, but to make sure that the city's work was done, and that was Will White. We can document what Will has accomplished over the last 5 years, and there are a few things I do want to put into the record because I think the public needs to understand the scope of his work. But I want to begin just with a simple value statement, because in all that Will has done on behalf of the city and prior to his service to the city on behalf of nonprofits, has been driven by a fundamental ethic, and a principle, that everyone in our community deserves a safe and decent and affordable place to call home. It is a simple proposition that continues to elude us, but thanks to Will's work, we are closer to the dream and the aspiration of making sure that all of our citizens have shelter. I could spend an hour going through the accomplishments. I want to highlight just a few. During Will's tenure, the city's funding for homeless programs expanded fivefold. That's a 500% increase, and that didn't happen by chance. That happened because the case was made to this council that investments in homeless services and housing actually changes lives and gives people a chance to move to the path to self-sufficiency. You made the case, and the council responded by putting new dollars into our homeless programs. And when I travel around the country, I hear the same thing wherever I go. The Portland, Multnomah County 10-year plan to end homelessness is a national model. And every other jurisdiction in the country aspires to have the success that we've had in our first 4 years. We would not have a 10-year plan to end homelessness without your leadership. Beyond that, we can talk about the human scale things, the 2,000 people who've been moved from streets and shelters to housing during your watch. 2,000 people who've had a chance to experience stability in their lives, a place to live, and then economic opportunities. You've been a champion for preservation, and preservation often gets left off the list of priorities, but when you and I worked together, it was the top of our list. And preservation recognizes that when we don't have resources, adequate resources to build, we sure as heck better preserve what we have. And in preserving our expiring use properties like the Clay Tower, and in setting forth a strategy to preserve another 10 projects like the Clay Towers between now and 2013, what you have done is ensured that almost 1,000 mostly older, frequently disabled citizens in our community will have the resource they need for the rest of their life, which is affordable housing. You have been a champion of the Resource Access Center, which is a vitally important component of the 10-year plan, and this council recently unanimously endorsed the proposal that came to council, supporting your vision of a facility that will provide shelter and services and a day center. And we think of it as a Project Homeless Connect 24/7 year-round. You launched the highly successful Economic Opportunity Initiative, which recognizes that just providing housing to low-income people isn't enough if we don't give them a hand up to economic opportunity. And we have partnered with nonprofits and organizations throughout our community to help boost the wages of low-income residents. As part of our merger of the creation of the new Housing Bureau, I have with great reluctance agreed that the Economic Opportunity Initiative will go to the Portland Development Commission. But as sad as I am to lose the Economic Opportunity Initiative, I know that the Portland Development Commission and the mayor are thrilled to have this gem and this jewel in their portfolio. You helped us call the question after 12 years of study and discussion about how to create a better system for delivering our services in our community. Judy Clegg studied it. Gretchen's been talking about it for 10 years. And forever, we have had this discussion. This year, the mayor and I called the question. Last year, the mayor and I called this question. We would not have been able to do so if the groundwork had not been laid, the argument made, and the compelling case established for fundamental alignment of our city programs. And when we are finished in alignment at the city level, the people you have served for these 5 years will have a bureau that is more responsive to their needs, more efficient in how we spend our money, and more accountable to the public. A couple other things that I want to mention, Will. The New Columbia, which is the marvelous rebirth of what we knew as Columbia Villa, occurred largely on your watch and has set a standard nationally for how Hope 6 programs deliver on the promise. And actually, in deconcentrating poverty, also ensure that there's no net loss of affordable units. Your work on the Iris Court redevelopment, bridging and bringing city investment into it, was critical. I think it's fair to say that during your tenure, you took the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, which was essentially a small bureau doing good work, to a much bigger bureau with much greater resources tackling housing and homelessness and poverty. And along the way, you're in the trust and support of this council. And as the fourth most senior member of this council and as the third housing commissioner in a great tradition, I am extremely grateful for the work that you've done. And looking forward, I could not be happier that you will be in Washington continuing to be a great ally for this city as we seek our fair share of federal dollars to fund our programs. But I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your service to our city, for your service to me, and for the impact you've made on low-income Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Can you get a mess?
Yeah.
Can I get yours? I'll go with you.
Yeah, well, some real value to it.
Let's get your picture here.
All right.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Harlan.
Thank you,
Nick. If I may, just the one thing I would like to say in closing, I appreciate all the compliments and the, I think, accurate note of achievements, but I really want to recognize that those haven't been my achievements. They've been the achievements of a bureau I've been privileged to lead that has 30-some very talented people working then with nearly 100 community-based organizations that actually carry out this work. And I just want to salute them and also to recognize that none of that could have been achieved without the support of this council. And I talk to my colleagues around the country who have a similar set of responsibilities, and they're amazed that I work in a city that has the kind of backing this city council has given over the time I've been here to carry out a mission that's really dedicated to helping out those who are the least fortunate in our community and have the least political impact. It's not something that directly is going to lead to increased contributions to members of this council, But between the council, the staff at BHCD, and the community organizations, those are the people that really deserve the thanks for the accomplishments that you've listed today. So thank you again very much. Good luck with the new Bureau of Housing. I think with that new alignment, we're going to see some great things in the future.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you, Will.
Carl, will you introduce item 109? Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to, yeah.
Request of Larry Tuttle to address council regarding Center for Environmental Equities Household Hazardous Waste Project. Mm-hmm.
Good morning. Welcome to City Council. Please give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Larry Tuttle. I'm the director of the Center for Environmental Equity, which is a small Portland-based nonprofit. 75% of our work involves cleaning up mining pollution in rural parts of Oregon, but we have another 25% of our time we didn't know what to do with, so we started a project, a Portland-based project called Clean to Green. I've previously briefed Commissioner Saltzman on this, but I wanted to bring it to the full council because it's an issue I think is important to the city, and that is diverting household hazardous waste from the waste stream, thereby protecting the health and safety of households, but also keeping these kinds of products out of landfills and out of urban water bodies. Today, in particular, I wanted to tell you about an issue that I found as part of this project that I didn't have a chance to brief Commissioner Saltzman on. And if you direct your attention to the second page of the green sheet that I passed out to you, there's a list of our priorities for 2009. And number five on that list is to implement a program to help our targeted households, which by definition, are households limited by age or income, mobility, any other limitations that would keep them from being able to deal with these issues on their own. And what we have found is in numerous presentations at senior centers and meal sites is that they have a heck of a time figuring out what to do with these wonderful CFLs, compact fluorescent lights, which, while they're beneficial to households, also contain mercury. And the information that I've recently read is that we'll put more than a billion of these mercury-containing light bulbs into our landfills this year, and that's growing exponentially with their use. And discussions with Metro, perhaps 75% of all the compact fluorescent lights bulbs that are burned out find their way into our local landfills. Now, there is a relatively small amount of mercury in these, but the issue is, when you're putting large numbers of small amounts, it still adds up to a lot. What we discovered as we kind of been developing this program for seniors is that there is no comprehensive diversion program for these CFLs on the horizon. And so I'm coming to you today not to ask that you do anything specific, but to tell you that sometime during this next year, I'll be coming back to you to have perhaps support a variety of ways in which we can divert these products from our landfills. And I realize that today is not an interactive forum, but I also want to offer that if you or your staff or any others that you would suggest that would like an additional briefing, I'd be happy to provide it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind talking to Lisa Libby on my staff, that'd be great.
Larry, I just wanted to ask you for the sake of everybody in this room and those listening, what is the appropriate way to dispose of a compact fluorescent light bulb?
CFLs, compact fluorescent lights, bulbs, are to be disposed of as hazardous waste. They are not recyclable. They have to be disposed of as hazardous waste in the same way as your leftover paints and cleaning products and all those other things that we accumulate in our basements and garages. So they are not recyclable. They have to be disposed of as hazardous waste.
So when neighborhoods have hazardous waste cleanup days and things like that, or that's the appropriate, save your bulbs and bring them to those? Or?
That is one way of doing it. There are also at least one business now that is taking them back. If they sell a bulb, they'll take them back. So those are the types of opportunities that we'll be looking for.
Which business is that?
It's actually Home Depot.
Great.
Thank you very much, Larry.
You're welcome.
For all your advocacy. Carla, item 110.
Request of Nick Steno to address council regarding a judgment award.
Mr. Steno? Absolutely. Come on up. Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you very much.
All you have to do is give us your first and last name, and you'll each have 3 minutes.
My name is Nick Steino. I live at 6733 Southeast Gladstone. My wife had a judgment award from the City of Portland in the amount of $7,762.97 plus interest. I am begging the city to do the right thing here and reverse this judgment to zero or grant her the same amount to make this judgment zero. On your second page of your booklet, you'll find a letter that I asked Tom Potter to help with this, and his assistant told me to contact an independent police review, which I did, and also called Officer Lee Sargent, and with no response from anyone. This incident happened on October 12, 2006. Officer Lee was responding to a 911 hang-up call from my wife and was in her driveway on private property with a glass of wine, looking at her Halloween decorations, waiting for me to come home from work at any time. Lee asked her if she called 911 in a joking manner, what she was going to do. What are you going to do, shoot me? Lee jumped out of his car, handcuffed her, did not read her rights, did not perform any tests, transported her to Hooper Detox, in which they kept her for 8 hours. He lied on his police reports, saying that she was intoxicated, dancing out in the middle of the streets. I have witnesses to testify that she was never in the street. She wasn't intoxicated, and the neighbor was talking to her when the police officer pulled up, which he didn't see. My wife suffers from a mental illness of agoraphobic and panic attacks. I feel this with this mental problem, Officer Lee, and with Officer Lee's mental problems, which you can see on page 6, 8, and 9, his erratic behavior with his wife kind of looked at my wife in the same way. Because no help was received from the city, we found an attorney, and because of the past, Officer Lee, we could not get it into trial, which I felt hurt the case. And under oath, Lee and Hooper testified falsely just to hurt our case. Now, we did settle with Hooper prior to the trial, and City Attorney Bill Manlove offered to settle with the city before the trial for $25,000 plus attorney fees. We called our attorney and told her to accept this offer. She was on her way to Seattle, and by the time she got back, she said that was taken off the table. I talked to Bill Manlove last week, the city attorney, and to my surprise, he said he was offered $50,000 plus attorney fees, which we were never told of. In my opinion, the city would have been out over $75,000, but now my wife owes this judgment. I feel the city is punishing my wife, Carol, for bringing this against the city, and I feel this is so wrong that she's been through. I plead with you to put an end to her nightmare, and we could do this today.
Mr. Stano, can I ask a couple of questions, sir?
Certainly.
With the indulgence of the council. The money that you're asking us not to pursue is a judgment entered by a federal district court on costs incurred by the city in the trial, correct?
That's correct. And So it was
$7,000 that Judge Mossman awarded the city as costs pursuant to the rule that a prevailing party gets their costs after trial, correct?
Correct.
So we're not, I just want to be clear, we're not in a position to judge the merits of this case. And please understand it, it just would not be appropriate for a city council to second guess a jury, a judge, or the legal process. But what you're asking us to do is not to pursue recovery of the $7,000, correct?
That's correct. Most of that $7,000 or almost $8,000 was recovery on items that weren't used at trial, subpoenas and depositions of people that weren't even used, double subpoenas like for the family and stuff and doctors.
The second question, sir, is did you appeal the decision of the district when the jury rendered its verdict, which you may have disagreed with? Did you appeal that to the next level?
I'm not an attorney, so I don't know what what you can do. Our attorney hasn't talked to us since this verdict came down in July. We were surprised when we got the letter. She had just sent it 2 weeks ago, and that's all it was. There's no explanation or anything. It was just a letter from the city.
Okay. The other thing is we cannot give you legal advice, but you have said at this hearing that there was an offer of settlement that was not communicated to you. You said you subsequently learned it might have been higher. Again, this council cannot address that because we don't know those facts as we sit here. And then you've said that your lawyer has not communicated with you since the trial, and you may not even be aware of what your rights are on appeal. And what I just want to encourage you to do, because before I took this job, I was a practicing lawyer, and we do have a bar associate. We have a bar.
Well, Mr. Manlove told me he thought I should contact the bar. But
so I just want to say, and I'm not giving you legal advice, but if you believe that you did not get the representation that you contracted for, you do have the right to bring a complaint with the bar. You may have lots of rights, and I would encourage you to get some legal advice so that you can assess those rights. Again, we can't give you legal advice, but you may be operating under a tight time frame to make that decision.
Sure.
And I strongly urge you to contact the bar and to find out what your rights are.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You want me to go ahead now? And
please.
Okay. Good morning, City Council. My name is Carol Steino. I am here today to plead for your help in a judgment against me from the City of Portland for the city's bill of cost. As you know, the amount, I won't go over that again. As a good citizen of Portland, I have never been in trouble with the law until this incident with Officer Lee. I tried to contact Mayor Potter on this matter because I saw Mayor Potter on television talking about the mentally ill and how the Portland police were changing the way they dealt with mentally ill people. This comes from how the Portland police handled the chassis incident. I received an email back from his assistant and told me to contact the individual police review committee, in which I did and filed a complaint. No action was taken with Officer Lee. My husband also contacted Officer Lee Sergeant with no response from him either. We even contacted Hooper, and they did not get back to us. This was such a horrifying and demeaning situation to go through, and how it has destroyed everything I worked so hard for throughout 30 years of therapy. I have no quality of life. I spend my days inside my home watching the world go by. I now stay mostly in the back of my home. I somehow feel safer there. My home used to be a safe place to be, but that was taken the night of October 12th of 2006. I did not want this to happen to anyone else, and no one from the city seems to care, so I found an attorney to represent me. We ultimately went to trial, which I did not want to do. To my surprise, Officer Lee and the people at Hooper would lie under oath. Excuse me. And the judge would not let Lee's past into the trial, which would have made a difference on the outcome of the trial. To make things even worse, we haven't heard anything from my attorney since the trial in July. I have tried to contact the attorney and her investigator, Emily, but with no response. I am seeing a new therapist now, but the nightmare from this is still happening. Then on January 14th, I received a letter from the city that was sent to my attorney, Michelle Burrows. This was a judgment award against me from the case with the city's bill of costs. I am asking you, the city council, for help in this matter because I have no income. I do not collect any disability benefits, never have. My husband's hours have been reduced because of the economy. We are barely making it now. Not only has this affected our lives, but now the guilt attributed to my husband's, you know, responsibility, even more so with me taking me to my therapy. I am totally dependent on him, and it's becoming even more stressful on him and his health. I'm hoping the city council will do the right thing to bring this to an end. Please grant a judgment here today to get rid of this judgment from the city. and this complete nightmare that I am going through. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Mrs. Steiner, you've just done something that many citizens would not be able to do in testifying before the City Council. I've sat where you have many times, and it's a very scary thing. I thank you for telling us about this.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi. It's okay, baby.
It's hard.
You have a written statement you'd like to put into the record. Would that be easier if we just added your statement to the record so that we could all read it?
What do you want to do, honey?
If you feel more comfortable, we would all have a chance to read it if you would prefer. It's your choice.
It's up to you, Nicole.
I don't know if I can do it.
Well, we're happy to, if you have written comments, we're happy to take your written comments. And we understand this is a stressful situation, and we really appreciate you being here.
And if you would give the clerk your statement, we'll make sure that everyone on council has a chance to read it, and we will respond to your request. And we thank you for coming in.
And we recognize that you're here in support of your mom, so that's got that message. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Carla, could you read item 113?
Request of John Acree to address council regarding Mayor Adams.
Mr. Acree, welcome to City Council.
Thank you.
Please give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is John Acree, and I've been a Portland resident for the past 15 years. I would like to thank the City Council for the opportunity to be here this morning and to speak to all of you. Thomas Jefferson once said, "He who permits himself to tell a lie once finds it much easier to do it a second and a third time, till at length it becomes habitual." In many situations where someone has chosen to lie, like you, subsequent lies must be told in order to cover up the initial lie. And most often, like yourself, you entangle others around you who have no idea that they become embroiled in your deceitful ways. For the validation of this, you only need to ask your fellow council member, Mr. Leonard, how he feels about being a part of this. Or if that does not make you feel comfortable, you can ask your past spokesperson, Mr. Nkrumah. While it is true that most of us at some point have lied in our lifetime, I myself learned that lying was an unacceptable behavior from my mother when I was 7 years old. Apparently, those same life lessons were not being doled out at the Adams family household when you were growing up. While many say that your love of Portland is quite evident by your hard efforts and dogged work ethic, I would submit that you hold one love higher than that. That would be your love of the Sam Adams political machine. From the moment this story surfaced, you have done everything in your power to try and save your own skin and ensure your ascent into the office of the mayor. There is no doubt that the election would have been dramatically different if we all had known about the level of your dishonesty. I, for one, have grown tired of our society's tolerance of unacceptable behavior. The sexual grooming of a 17-year-old, regardless of yours or their orientation, would not be accepted if you were Mr. Adams, the math professor, or Father Adams, the priest. But apparently, having mayor in front of your name gets you a free pass. As a side note, in the month of December 2008, the city of Portland's unemployment rate stood at 9%. This was the same month that you hired Amy Ruiz, with absolutely no experience as your strategic planning and sustainability policy advisor. She has gone on record to admit that she has no experience for the position, albeit for one very important skill set. She was a reporter writing a story about you. Maybe I'm being over-presumptuous, but with the city of Portland having a population of close to 600,000 people and the unemployment rate at 9%, I would think out of the approximately 54,000 unemployed people, someone out there would have had to have had sustainability and planning experience and wanted to work. You have lost my trust and the trust of countless others. My choice for mayor is someone whose first instinct is not to tell lies and then engage others unknowingly to cover it up. You can rest assured your time in this building will be very short-lived. If need be, I will gather every signature myself required to recall you and ensure that the only thing you will be doing in this building is sitting back here watching these meetings. I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you.
Thank you. That gets us to the consent agenda. There are two items to pull from the consent agenda, item 120 and item 130. Does anyone else have any items to pull from the consent agenda? If not, let's call the roll on the consent agenda.
Fritz?
Yes.
Fish?
Yes.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Let's move to time certain. Could you read item 114?
Accept the special events report and direct the Office of Management and Finance, Revenue Bureau, in partnership with the Street and Sidewalk Use Advisory Committee to implement recommendations.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Sue Klobertanz, and I'm Director of the Revenue Bureau for the City of Portland. You may or may not know that one of the responsibilities of the Revenue Bureau is permitting special events. The Bureau issues permits and assesses fees for walks and marches, parades, athletic events, and other processions in the street or on sidewalks. Currently, the fees are based on a limited number of preset size and event criteria. In issuing the permits, the staff reviews the request based on the need to maximize the safety of street participants, minimize the inconvenience to the general public, minimize disruption of public services caused by the events, and provide the public with an opportunity to exercise protected rights of assembly and expression. The special events administrator works with the Street and Sidewalk Use Advisory Committee, and that we usually refer to it as the Special Events Committee, partnering with the Police Bureau, the Fire Bureau, the many faces of transportation, TriMet, ODOT, and Parks. Commissioner Fritz, I went back and I checked, and according to our current administrative rules, we currently have a vacancy representative from ONI, and so we need to fill that, as well as adding citizen committees, representatives to that committee. We all know that special events are great for Portland. Events bring the community together, events help people stay healthy, and events attract new visitors to Portland. The last time the city completed a comprehensive review of the special events program was about 20 years ago. 8 years ago, we did raise permit fees and made a few changes, but even since 2001, we've had a 78% increase in the number of events, increased participation in population, increased events within events, and increased downtown construction. All of this makes the events more difficult and dangerous. Currently, the city subsidizes 95% of the cost of special events, resulting in a cost of close to $1 million for the city. All of that background brings us up to last summer, when in an effort to improve the special events programs, we knew we wanted to take the initiative to address the special challenges. We wanted to utilize the knowledge of the Special Events Committee as a problem-solving body, use technology to streamline the process and reduce costs, and complete a thorough analysis of the current programs and policies. Last summer, the Revenue Bureau was lucky enough to have Jennifer McFarlane, a graduate student at PSU, intern with us. Jennifer's assignment was to complete a review of the Special Events Program. The purpose of her report, we told her before she started, was to assess the current policies and compare Portland's policies to other cities, looking for best practices, gather input from local community members and stakeholders, research the economic impact of the special events, and make some policy recommendations to strike a balance between cost recovery and city subsidies. I've asked Jennifer to briefly describe the process we used to get to today with you, and you should have in your folder a rather lengthy study with the lots of the details, but Jennifer's just going to briefly tell you the process that we used to get to today.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. My name is Jennifer McFarland. I'm an MPA student at Portland State University. In June 2008, I came to the Revenue Bureau as part of a performance management program. I'm also a resident of Portland and have participated in a lot of special events, so I came at this from a participant standpoint, definitely an outside perspective. In mid-June, I started developing a methodology that led to the special events review. From June 25th to September 1st, I surveyed 23 other municipalities, including the six identified by the auditor's office, and then other cities that were of comparable size or in the Pacific Northwest to get more of a feel of what's going on. I asked administrators a series of questions regarding the number of events, event categories, permit fees, application process, cost recovery, fee structure, and insurance requirements. The outcomes of the survey were that cities have as many, if not more, events as the city of Portland. Most cities do not have categories. They're more concerned with what's going on at the event. Most cities don't regulate the number of events. And the application process is very similar. However, most comparable cities do have a higher percentage of cost recovery. Portland's flat fee system is not a model utilized by other cities because flat fees don't address the complexity of special events, such as routing, city services, and the impact an event can have. The three primary affected bureaus are Portland Department of Transportation, Portland Police, and the Revenue Bureau. We have many external stakeholders, event organizers, Portland Business Alliance, TriMet, ODOT, venues such as Pioneer Courthouse Square and the Rose Garden, the Tri-County Lodging Association, and of course, Portland residents. Through a series of ongoing outreach efforts, including phone calls and emails, we held four public meetings and conducted an online survey sent to all 2007 event organizers. The event organizer survey showed a few areas for improvement, but demonstrated an overall satisfaction for the program. Stakeholders expressed the need for increased communication, increased education, restructuring of event types, designated routes, an a la carte menu, and policies that address the complexity of special events. Thank you.
The resolution you have before you, because this is such a shift from where we currently are with the code and our administrative rules, we wanted to come to you and ask direction to move forward with the types of changes that Jennifer's just described. There are four major policy recommendations that I've asked the special events coordinator, Allison Madsen, to briefly describe to you that with the approval of the resolution today, we'll move forward with.
Thank you, Sue. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Allison Madsen. I am the Special Events Coordinator. As Sue stated, I'd like to briefly address those four proposed policy recommendations. The first is to develop a database identifying low, medium, and high impact routes. Since there's a direct correlation between an event's route and the cost of city services, this database would help us to develop a fee schedule based on routing and the costs associated with servicing particular routes. The second would be an a la carte menu of city services and their associated costs. This recommendation would allow a special event to be accurately estimated, and event planners would be able to see how their event construction can impact the cost and their cost. So there's several examples of those type of impacts, the public portion of the right-of-way being used, whether it's the sidewalk, the street, or a combination of both. The location in the city where the event happens, as you know, several parts of town have much higher density in pedestrian and vehicular traffic. The participant type and number of participants, large events, more support. Signage requirements for detours, street closures, that nature. Bridge crossings, either partial or full closures, have impacts in many ways. Crossing MACs and streetcar lines. Roads being used by TriMet primary routes. Those require TriMet supervisors and police support to keep transportation moving. And also, crowd control and traffic control require police support. And the third provision is to make a provision for what we term an event within an event. Multiple events, usually permitted as one event, have different routes and different event types built into them. They do increase traffic impacts, planning time, personnel, and an overall burden on the city event resources. An example would be a run that has several different lengths, and routes built in, as well as possibly a walking event or a children's event built in. We would normally permit that as one event, whereas you can see that several different layers mean several different layers. And then the last would be to separate free speech or public assembly permits. These events are going to be the ones that require the most work to reach consensus by all parties. We will be working with the ACLU and our stakeholders to find a process that encourages community discourse while still being fair to all event planners. Like other events, free speech events will be encouraged to use routes that meet their objectives while still have a low impact on city services. Thank you.
The next steps, with the approval of the resolution today, will move forward, and the resolution calls for a September timeline when we would bring back proposed code changes and the associated administrative rules. We expect to use our special events committee, re-energizing it by adding citizen positions as well as the representative from ONI, and also have a number of public workshops as we've been holding with the stakeholders so that we can find the best results. From the input we've received so far, we believe we're on the right track, and we expect to have many more meetings and work sessions before returning to you with the proposed code language. That concludes our staff presentation, but we have with us today three folks who have participated in our process since last summer: Jeff Henderson from the Portland Triathlon, Aaron Montaglione from Terrapin Events, and Sergeant Robert Vopel from the Portland Police Department.
Any questions of staff before they leave?
Are you coming back?
I can.
Or do you want to ask now? Or
if it's okay, Mayor, can we hear the full presentation and then have them back?
Yeah.
Sure. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning.
Please give us your first and last name.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Robert Vopel. I'm a police sergeant with the City of Portland. I currently work in the traffic division. My position at the time this started was the special events coordinator for the traffic division, City of Portland. We run an approximately 110 to 120 events per year from that position. I want to thank the commissioners to look at this resolution to move forward with the special events cost recovery. And I want to recognize some folks that participated in this process. As it was said before, there were many stakeholders involved. And we, from the beginning, made this a collaboration of all these stakeholders, to include the Portland Police Bureau, the traffic division, the central precinct, which is the precinct that's most adversely affected, the chief's office, who was involved with are supporting us, the Portland Bureau of Transportation, particularly Doug Thompson, who does a lot of these events side by side with us, is also on the special events committee, Shirley Block with TriMet, and Dick Peterson with TriMet, who were involved with this because they're heavily impacted and they adversely affected. The Parks Bureau, Carrie Coker with Parks Bureau was involved. The Bureau of Revenue, Sue Clobertanz has been awesome. She's spearheaded this, and I think she picked the right person with Jennifer McFarland doing the study. She did an extremely comprehensive study, a study that I don't think I would have had the time or the intelligence to do myself. Then Don Yamasaki, the special events coordinator there, and now the Allison Madsen, Portland Streetcar, Lenore DeLuise, and then we go into the event organizers who were also involved. Two folks that were with me today, Aaron Montaglione with Terrapin Events and Jeff Henderson with the City of Portland Triathlon. We had others, Portland Marathon, Les Smith with Portland Marathon, Kyle Kamberg with Race for the Cure was there, Marilyn Clint with the Portland Rose Festival Association, Ken Turner, who's with the 82nd Avenue Business Association, but he also with the 82nd Avenue Parade, was a partner in this, and then John Atherton was a partner as well. And not knowing all the names, but there were several neighborhood association representatives at these meetings and at these collaborations. Mm-hmm. we wanted to have a broad-based spectrum of what it took to come to a consensus and to come to an equitable outcome, not only for the City of Portland, but for the event organizers as well. Because as was earlier stated, the organizations that bring these events to Portland are, they're vital in the City of Portland. It makes Portland a unique place and a more vibrant city to live in and to play in. Also, as has been spoken of, is the free speech events. City of Portland is recognized around the country for its free speech events, and we don't want to impact them adversely by charging fees for anything like that. From my perspective, throughout the process, we've always tried to move forward with focusing on the events that actually charge a fee to be in the event, and that's the ones that we try to recover some costs from, and the emphasis of not charging the free speech or neighborhood parades. That's a multitude of parades that we have throughout the year that I wouldn't recommend charging anything for those as well. I do appreciate, like I say, taking a look at this resolution to move forward with this. And Jeff Henderson.
Thank you, Sergeant. I am Jeff Henderson, the organizer of the City of Portland Triathlon, which was held for the first time in 2007. I'm the guy trying to get people to jump in the Willamette River willingly. And having been through the process of bringing a new event to Portland, a very logistically challenging event with the swimming, the biking, and the running downtown, over the past 3 years, I've developed an appreciation of the difficulty that the logistical challenges the city faces from all those different organizations and bureaus and groups in staging all of these special events during the summer. And as an organizer of one of the special events, I can speak to my belief that they are very important to the fabric of the city. This process of revisiting the cost recovery and the structure of the permits, it was an interesting one. It was a full-year process that had many stakeholders, and I wanted to speak to the very open and inclusive nature of the process. As one of the stakeholders, as an event director, I was very grateful to have the opportunity to speak to the proposals that were being made, discuss them in a very open manner, and come to a resolution and move forward with some things that maybe I don't support all of them, but I can understand why they were proposed, and I can understand why they're important to the city and the different constituency groups for having these events still being possible and still being economically feasible while balancing the logistical difficulties. In creating the Portland Triathlon, Mayor Adams was very helpful in making that event possible and bringing all the different groups together to talk about some of the issues with it. And this process was very, very similar to that. And I just wanted to speak to the inclusive nature and the fact that I felt my voice was heard and that some very good compromises were reached on the very difficult challenges facing these different groups for putting on these events. Thank you.
I'm Aaron Montaglione. I'm the owner of Terrapin Events. I've organized events in Portland for the past 8 years, and I just kind of want to reiterate what these guys said. I think they said pretty much what I'd like to say. You know, all those folks that came together that Sergeant Vopel had mentioned, you know, everyone played a part. It was very open, and everybody's collective thoughts at these meetings on what we would like to do, what we would like to see happen, and everybody's thoughts were taken into account. When I was first told that we were going to have this meeting to talk about rates and things like that, I kind of rolled my eyes and I said, oh boy, here we go. You know, I'm going to go out of business here in the next couple years because I can't afford to pay the price and stuff like that. But it was clear from the outset when we all met that they were taking everybody's, you know, the businesses into account and all the resources that come into account, the police and PDOT and TriMet and the streetcar and things like that. And nobody was excluded, and we're all included 100% in the process. And I really appreciate that. And I think we've come to some good conclusions as a group. And I think we could probably find something that works for everybody. And I, for one, am extremely happy with the way the process happened. So I think it was good.
Well, Sergeant, my opportunity to thank you and your team, who I see at a lot of events, and I just want to, and I know council sees you all as well, is I want to underscore it's a lot of work for you seasonally, and you do it with incredible, and your team does it with incredible good humor, and so I'm really, really appreciate that. I know all the events that you help keep safe appreciated as well. And Jeff, I've never been through a harder
start. August 23rd this year.
Good.
Expect to see you there.
I'll be jumping in the river. I learned so much for the however many years we worked on getting yours off the ground. And I think that was part of the inspiration to see if we could make it easier for future startup events. So thanks for sticking with it. And we're very proud of the Portland Triathlon.
Thank you, sir.
Comment as well. I want to thank all three of you, too. The police not only keep us safe, both at the free speech events and also at the parades, that you do it in a way that's very Portland and very friendly, and I really appreciate that. And then the special events that are put on are also very Portland, and I'm very glad to hear that you believe the process was well done. I agree that the report is very well done, and so I'm pleased that we're going to be able to continue to provide these services by sharing the cost a little more equitably, because I think it's important to all of us.
Yeah, can I add a comment just with that? As an event organizer, you do see the strain that we put on these guys, and so you know, it's just really important to see that there is some cost recovery, because there are tons of officers out there and, of course, TriMet and stuff like that, too. But you do see, and it's, you know, I give him a call a week or two before the event, and he's still working on an event that happened that weekend or the weekend before, and they're doing their post reports and stuff like that. So it's a constant strain on these guys, and I do believe at least financially they have to get some recovery. So I think it's important that we're doing this.
Thanks for your participation in this. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sue, do you mind coming back up, or your team? Commissioner Fish.
Thank you. First, I just want to say to Jennifer McFarland, since this report deals with one slice of the puzzle, and I, as the Parks Commissioner, have another slice that's not really addressed, I wonder, can we renew your fellowship program another year, or who do we have to talk to at the Hatfield School?
She's still working for us.
But Jennifer, since you've made an enormous time commitment and you've done such a great contribution to the city, could you just tell us very briefly what is the program at the Hatfield School that led to you working on behalf of the city?
Sure. Well, I'm in the Master of Public Administration program, which is the Hatfield School of Government at PSU. And I was a part of the Oregon Fellows Performance Management Program run by George Beard. He's a faculty member, and it sends the top students from PSU and other top institutions all throughout the city and the state every summer to work on different projects.
Well, you know, the motto of PSU is let knowledge serve the city. And we talk about the partnership between the city and PSU, but this is as good an example as we get. So thank you very much
for your
great work. Sue, I have a couple of questions and a comment. First, the comment. I went with my family to Pioneer Courthouse Square for the lighting of the tree this past Christmas holiday. And as you know, it was a wildly successful event. They brought many more people than we anticipated to downtown. But as a result, we had some crowd control issues, which is just we were a victim of our own success. And what I observed being stuck with my five-year-old along Yamhill was that we had some logistical issues that had to be worked out between TriMet and Portland Police. TriMet were initially putting up barriers to prevent people from going on the TriMet tracks, which in turn caused the sidewalks to become congested and you couldn't move, which in my judgment created some safety issues. Fortunately, Portland Police showed up and began to sort of work the perimeter. But then that caused the next challenge was that the crowd was so big that the crowd spilled out onto Broadway. So now you had traffic circulation problems, including some emergency vehicles that had some challenges getting through. And